Alright, hi everybody and welcome to Lecture 51 in this American History Program of History at Our House. We are entering in, this is about the halfway mark, isn't it, of our academic year. And we are entering into part 4 of 6 of our program. Part 4, I call it The Founding. So in other words, the founding or the birth of the United States. Today in particular, we are going to talk about the coming of the American Revolution. So, of course, and this is really now, finally, in a way, this is really American history. You know, all of it, we've been studying a lot already, right? We've been working for months and months, studying a lot of interesting facts from history. And what we've been doing all this time is studying the information that is necessary to make sense of American history. And what I mean by that is this. If you just jump in anywhere in history, you know, let's say, to pick a spot that we are all familiar with, if you just jump into history at 1776, right, which is when the Founding Fathers declared independence, if you just jump in there without knowing anything from before that, well, you're going to find yourself faced with a really complicated puzzle. You're going to find that there are these 13 colonies. You're going to find that they've got this king over in England. What's he doing in England? How come he's not in America? You're going to find that, there's these other countries involved, France and Spain, and where did they come from, and what are they all about? And you're going to find that these American founding fathers, they've got all these ideas, and they're declaring independence in the name of every individual's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And as wonderful as that all sounds, it really is quite a puzzle to figure out what is going on. And there's going to be so much more that you will encounter that will be very hard to make sense of. And so what we do when we want to study a story in history is we have to start to get ready. We have to learn a few things to kind of get ourselves ready to understand the story. And we have done that now over the past few months. And the most important items of knowledge that we have learned so far are now displayed on the latest version of the Anchor Fact Timeline. I'm going to share my screen with you guys and take you now to the very latest version of our Anchor Fact Timeline. And most of the facts on here you will recall, though the arrangement of the facts has changed so that we can make room for new facts. And one of the facts on here is new. I don't think it will be hard for you guys to tell me which one. But wait a minute, I'm not asking that question just yet, right? But the point here of our Anchor Fact Timeline is to highlight the information that we need to know and remind ourselves of in order to make sense of the story of America, in order to make sense of, well, the world we live in. Remember, that is our purpose in studying history. History is not about the past. People who think that history is about the past are, well, they're just wrong. History is about the world we live in. How did it come to be the way that it is? Why is it the way that it is? And what's happening in the world? And how do we make sense of it? As it turns out, because human beings are so amazing, things that they did hundreds and thousands of years ago still matter now, still affect the life that we live, still are important. Which means what? First key word reminder of the day. When I say there are things from the past that are important to know now, what am I saying? The word important here, of course, is the key word. What's our definition of the word important? First day back after a long weekend. Everybody is racking their brains. Before I let you answer, Abby, I want to let everybody in on a reminder here about the word important. Is the word important the same thing as good? Is that the same thing? Is good a synonym for important? Or important a synonym for good, Rosetta?
No, it's not.
Okay. Can you give me an example of something on this timeline that's important but not good?
The fall of Rome.
The fall of Rome. Okay, yeah, that would be an example, or even much more close to home, right? The attacks of 9/11 would be something absolutely that are terrible, and yet very important. The two examples on here that are important but not good, in fact, there are maybe another, there's at least one more on here, right? Okay, so important and good are not the same thing. So then, what is important? What does that mean to say something from the past is important? Abby?
It means that it plays a large role in the world we live in today, that it means something.
Yeah,
but
you're on the right track.
It does not mean that it's good.
Okay, you're on the right track. It means that something from the past helps us to better understand the world around us. And here is the precise definition of the word important. Important means worthy of attention. Worthy of attention. Okay, so many, many things have happened in the past, more than anybody can possibly know. But we do not need to know about when King John woke up in 1215 and put on his socks. Why not? Right? Am I going to tell you the story of King John's socks and who darned them? Abby?
No, it's not important.
Okay, but something happened in 1215 which was really important, which means still had something to do with the world that we live in. It's worthy of attention now. So this is our review, and this is our new item, which I know everybody was able to see on the timeline. We were talking about the roots of English liberty, which means the roots of American liberty. Something happened in 1215. This is a little bit of a review here that have to do with the freedom of every person in this class. In fact, I think it's pretty fair to say that nobody here would be free without this event. That's how great it is. What happened in 1215, Patrick?
Magna Carta.
Okay, the Magna Carta, which means what? That's a Latin expression for what? Rosetta?
Great Charter.
Okay, now that has to do with King John. It's a lot more important than his socks, though. So, what happened to King John in 1215? Review of how we all came to be free. Go ahead, Abby.
Well, his lords captured him and forced him to sign the Magna Carta, which basically stated that the king is not above the law.
Ooh, excellent, right? Now, what does that have to do with your and my freedom right now? That happened, look at that, 800 years ago, literally. 800 years ago, literally, right? 1215 plus 800 is 2015. How can something that happened 800 years ago be very important to your freedom right now? How is that possible? What's the connection between this and this and you? Is there a connection in your mind? There is. What is it? What is it? English people started to be more free because of the Magna Carta. How? Let's start with that. Let's just make sure we're clear. You know what? I'm going to bring up this little diagram here to remind you of an interesting this idea. What the Magna Carta did was it created a certain kind of government, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what the English had before the Magna Carta was this. How would you explain in simple terms what a monarchy is? What is a monarchy? Dana, please.
A person that rules everybody else.
Yes, one person. Mon is a prefix that means one, right? This part of the word mon is a prefix and it means one. One person rules, okay? And then over here, we have the other idea of a society where people's rights are protected by a constitution, and that's called a republic. Well, in England, they had an interesting mix. You put those two together, and you get what Abby said. You get a place where there's a king, but where the king's power is limited because people's rights are protected by a set of laws, starting with the Magna Carta. Okay, now how do we get to today? Do Americans have a king? You better know the answer to that question. Who's your king, Jack? Do you have a king? Jack doesn't want to answer. Henry, who's your king?
There is no king.
Good. That's the correct answer. No, Americans don't have a king. So America is a republic. Okay. But we have an interesting thing. It's kind of, you know, the arrows in this diagram can go in a lot of different ways. England had a monarchy, and then it had a constitutional monarchy, and now in America we have a republic. So actually we could kind of draw the arrows in another direction. That would be the direction of history in a way. Okay, but so what? How does that happen is what we are going to learn about starting today. How do we go from, we already have one step forward back in England. We have a monarchy. And then the people, the lords, as Abby was saying, rebelled against the king, and they forced him to agree to the Great Charter in 1215. And from then on, the king was not above the law. Okay, but so why then don't Americans still have a king? Isn't that a great idea? The king is not above the law? That is a fantastic idea. What's the problem with it? What's the problem with it? And why don't Americans have a king now? Do kings like to follow the law? Nash?
Yes.
They do! Oh my gosh, you have a nice view of kings. Clara? Anna?
They do not.
Absolutely not. To be a king is to be a ruler. That means you get to boss everybody around. You guys like to try doing that with each other, right? Being the boss. It feels better to be the boss than to be the one who gets bossed around, right? So, no, kings like to be the boss. Kings are little bullies. So, Nash, I'm afraid that's, you know, you have a, like I said, you have a nice view of kings. The truth is, kings are not nice people. They like to rule others. And so, no, they don't like to follow the rules. So this is why we're going to get to the United States of America. Because the kings don't want to follow the rules. And so eventually, what the kings want is more power. So eventually what happens in this arrangement, which is a nice idea. It's better than not, you know, it's a constitutional monarchy is better than just a pure monarchy. But the problem with it is that the kings don't want to follow the rules. So what does everybody else have to do to keep the constitutional monarchy working? Like, what did we see them doing back in England, Abby?
Rebel and fight and
capture the king again. And then, like in England, they had parliaments, right? And so they have to keep on watching out for the king. Because why? Every chance he gets, the king who wants more power is going to grab that power, and he's not going to respect people's freedoms. All right. So now we have the Magna Carta of 1215, and after that, for hundreds of years, the people of England and the kings just kept on arguing about whether or not the king has certain powers or whether or not he has to respect people's rights. And when Englishmen started to come to America, well, something really interesting happened. So we have our anchor fact of Jamestown and Plymouth, which was when America started to be settled. And, well, the people came over here, and in a way that was wonderful. Because how did that affect their relationship to the king for people coming over to America? especially, you know, the people of Plymouth, they really wanted to get away from the king, right? What was it? What was so good about people being able to come to America and leave England as far as kind of freedom is concerned? Why was that such a positive thing? Clara? Anna?
So that they could worship God the way they wanted to.
Right. So the Plymouth settlers wanted that. That is true. Because back in Europe, what was the arrangement? Back in England, could you have whatever religion you wanted to have? Remember, everybody here should be able to tell me. Well, not everybody. But the Latin rule that means the king decides what religion you are allowed to have. Come on now, what's our Latin phrase? We got the Magna Carta as one Latin phrase. Everybody's supposed to know this one. Nemo.
Cuius regio, eius religio.
Cuius regio, eius religio. Very good, which means the king decides, the ruler decides the religion. Right? So yeah, the settlers of Plymouth could escape from that and have the religion that they wanted, but also just anybody coming to America could get away from the king. I mean, the Atlantic Ocean is really huge, right? The Atlantic Ocean is really huge. So if you get across the Atlantic Ocean and you survive and you build a life for yourself in America, well, you're never gonna see the king. Right? He likes to stay in his nice comfy castle back in England. So you're never going to see him, and your life is going to be very different than that. So people from England started to come over and have this life with more freedom in it. However, they still had a king. So what happened when people came to America was, oh, did I lose my monarchy diagram here? Yeah, this compromise. What happens when people came to America was, well, this part over here was on one side of the ocean, right? And so people were kind of over on this side in America. If you can imagine this kind of like a map, right? This is the American side and this is the European side. Well, these are kind of very separate now, more so than they ever have been before. And people were learning to be free. Enjoying it, right, in a way that they never had before. Have you put your hand down unless you have a further question or comment? Okay, so what we are going to start talking about now, though, is, well, the fact that this side of the constitutional monarchy started to be a bully again. Right, this side, the monarchy, the king, started to get tough again and to say, you guys over in America are not pulling your weight. I am the king. You must follow my orders. And therefore, well, now you don't get to be quite as free as you are used to. So we're going to see that the balance, right? I'm going to draw a little bit here. Let's see, Mr. Powell. We're going to test Mr. Powell's drawing skills. Another way to think of this arrangement here is to kind of think of it as a balance. Right? You guys get my point, right? With it being a balance, like a balance beam. Right? And so if I draw like this, you know, it's kind of like a seesaw. Right? If the king's power goes up, then the balance tips. If the king's power goes down, then, you know, then people have more freedom. So what we're going to see is that after the wars that we were just studying, where England takes over North America, right? The king's power was high. The king was more powerful. In fact, the king of Britain was more powerful than any king had ever been. And he was getting pretty drunk with that power. The king of England now had, I don't have a map right on the screen right now for you guys, but remember, the king of England was starting to take over India. The king of England had lands on every continent, basically. He was becoming very powerful. And remember what the king thought of colonists. What was the purpose of a colony? Abby?
Well, one of them was to bring the land that they settled under the control of the home country, and the other one was that they could make things
for
there in that colony.
Right.
That otherwise England would have to buy from countries like France.
All right. And both of those are examples of doing what the mother country wants, right? Giving the mother country products and bringing that territory under the control of the mother country. And, well, if you're the king, that means your control, right? He wanted to be in charge. All right, so now we begin the story of the American Revolution. Because we have people in America who are used to being more free. They have lived for quite a while now without the king having much power over them. And when people are used to being free, they get pretty angry when their freedoms are taken away from them. So now the king comes along and he says, wait a minute, you guys are too free. This arrangement that we have is not going to work any longer. And the king said, well, there's rules I expect you to follow. There's things I expect you to do for me. And from now on, I'm going to be in charge. All right, so let's see now. That's going to be the first part of our story of the American Revolution, is we are going to see an argument. The classic argument of constitutional monarchy. The classic. It's just going to be as if we were back in England. Just like as if we were back in England. On the one hand, we have the rights of people and their freedoms. And on the other hand, we have the king. And the two sides are arguing because basically we still have that. And then in the second part of our story, we're going to see that the American colonists decide, that's it. This argument is all that's ever going to happen in life. As they were absolutely right, because it had been the case for hundreds and hundreds of years. All that ever happens in constitutional monarchy is you have to argue with the king nonstop. Nonstop. He's going to take away your rights. You have to fight to get them back. He wants to take your rights. You have to stop him from doing it. You'll never, ever be free if there is a king. So in the second part of our story, American colonists decide, that's it. We are going to be independent. We are not going to have a monarchy anymore. And then in the third part of our story, they are going to make a republic. Right? They're going to break from the monarchy. They're going to get rid of this part and just have this part. Okay? So that diagram got really messy now. So I'm going to get rid of all my red lines because they're very confusing. Okay. All right. So before we go for today, I'm going to tell you the story of the first big argument between king and colonists in the American Revolution. The first big argument that leads to the founding of the United States. In this argument, I'm going to go ahead and chat. I'm going to type it on the screen as well because it's not a set of words that you're going to be very familiar with. So I'm going to go ahead and type it on the very same screen that we're looking at. Let me do it in magenta for fun. Okay, so this argument is called the Writs of Assistance case, and it's from 1761. All right, there we go. It's on screen. Hopefully you guys can all read that. Now, these are probably things that you've never heard of. What is a writ? You guys know what it means to assist somebody, and it's a case. So does anybody have a guess as to what this is going to be about? What is it? Where do we see cases in life? Anybody know? Walker, Allison?
Court.
Yeah, in court, right? This is going to be a lawsuit, is what it's going to be. And lawsuits usually are arguments, right? What, two sides? They can't decide what to do? I mean, if it's not a criminal case where somebody's being accused of a crime, but oftentimes what a case will be, a law case will be, when two people disagree, they cannot figure out how to agree, so they go to court, and then the judge will decide. All right, so we have that kind of a story here, except it has to do with an argument between the king and the colonists. And they can't decide how to do things. So here's the story of the Writs of Assistance case. It has to do with the fact that the people in America were used to being free, And they were used to pretty much trading with whoever they wanted. So, if you were in Virginia, what were you making? Remember what the colonists in Virginia were mostly working hard to make? And that's why they needed the head rights and they had the big plantations and so on. Abby?
Tobacco.
You were making tobacco, right? And if you were in Massachusetts, you might be making something else. You might be cutting down trees in order to make ships because there's really good tall lumber there and you might be making ships. Or you might be making a whole bunch of different products. A lot of the products they made back then we wouldn't recognize today because we don't use them anymore. But they were making different things and trading with people and trading sometimes with each other and with people from other colonies, no matter what country it was. Because people in the Americas were near to each other and they wanted to make as much money as possible and have the best life that they could have, so they would trade with each other. But remember, what is the purpose of a colony as far as the king is concerned? Are Englishmen supposed to trade with Spanish people or Spaniards, as we might call them? Are English people supposed to trade with Frenchmen? Are Englishmen supposed to trade with the Dutch or anybody else? What's the idea there? Why are you not supposed to trade with anybody else? According to the rules, anyway. Rosetta?
Because you were giving them money, and they're the enemies, and so soon you run out of money.
Yeah, there's the fear that if you are buying things from other people, that those people are getting gold and silver, and their king, their mean bully of a king, will have more money because of it. Right, so yeah, making colonies, the whole idea was Englishmen will trade only with Englishmen. So for Englishmen to trade with others was kind of viewed as a kind of treason. It was kind of, you are not being a good Englishman. You are doing, and this is what the government would call it, they would call it, you are breaking the rules, you're not supposed to trade with other people. So they called this smuggling. If you would trade with somebody against the rules, that's what governments call smuggling. Trading with somebody against the rules that the government has made. So Englishmen in the Americas would do a lot of smuggling because, well, they wanted to trade as much as possible to live the best life they possibly could. And if they couldn't sell as much as they wanted to England, well, why shouldn't they be able to trade with somebody else? They didn't agree with this idea that trading with people leads to war. They didn't agree with the idea that trading somehow leads to bad results. So they were smugglers. A lot of people in the Americas were smugglers, which sounds like they were criminals, but only criminals because, well, they didn't agree with this set of rules that said they didn't have a right to trade freely. So now once but the king decided, okay, around this time, around the time of 1761, the king decided no more smuggling. We are going to crack down on these Americans who want to trade freely. We're going to force them to follow the rules. So the king said, all right, I'm going to give my police officers writs. There's the word. A W-R-I-T. It's almost like the word, I mean, if we added an E on the end of T, right after the T, it would be write. To write, right? Like a writ was something written. A writ was a written permission that police officers would be able, not wrists, because that's the S. We don't want that. Write and writ are the words to compare there. And so a writ was a special permission that allowed police officers to go into people's businesses and their homes in order to look for goods that were smuggled. Now, if a government suspects you of being a criminal, right, nowadays, then yes, a police officer can sometimes go into your house or can sometimes arrest you, right? This makes sense. Police officers have to have the power to enforce the laws. The thing about the writs of assistance was this, The writs of assistance meant that police officers could go into anybody's house or home whenever they wanted. Police officers could go into people's business or homes whenever they wanted. Now tell me, is that compatible with freedom? Are you free if somebody else, if the government, can go into your house anytime? Abby?
No, it isn't free.
No, absolutely. I mean, the whole point of a house is that it's a place where only you are allowed to go. It's a really important part of being a free person, that it's only for you, not for other people. And as long as you're not violating the rights of anybody else, then the government shouldn't be able to go into your house. Now, if they suspect you of a crime, yes, maybe. Okay, but there's very, very special cases where the government can only do that if you are a free person. But if the government can go into your house anytime it wants, what kind of world is that like? Where would we see something like that back in history? Where people are completely at the mercy of the power of the government. Walker, Allison?
It would be like having a monarchy.
Yeah, and where do we have that on our diagram here?
What?
Where do we have that on our diagram, on our anchor fact timeline? Oh, I guess you got some noise there, huh? Abby, go ahead.
We could find that in the Dark Ages after the fall of Rome or in Mines Norma
or
somewhere around the Magna Carta.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, that was common in ancient times, that people didn't have any rights. The government ruled them however it wanted. And so, yeah, now the whole point of constitutional monarchy was that you could balance that. Was that the government had to behave in a certain way and could not just invade your life whenever it wants. So the writs of assistance case was when an English colonist or an American colonist named James Otis, I'm going to go ahead and chat that name here so I don't have to put a new chat. We're coming to the end here. James Otis, who was an American lawyer, sued the government. He sued the king and he said, you cannot do this. You cannot give the police a piece of paper, a writ of assistance that says that they can go into people's homes or businesses whenever they want. That is against the freedom of the people. That is against the rights of Englishmen. So here we have, starting in 1761, the beginning of an important argument. In a constitutional monarchy, there's supposed to be a balance. A balance between whether or not the government has power over you or whether or not you have rights. Which one is it? If the government can go into your home anytime it wants, well, the balance has tipped in it, hasn't it? It has tipped completely in the direction of monarchy. So James Otis was arguing in the writs of assistance case as a lawyer. He said, Englishmen, ever since when, have been protected against such injustice. Rosetta?
Ever since the signing of the Magna Carta.
Ever since, that's the start of it, right? Maybe not everybody equally back here in 1215, but we are English American colonists and we have the rights of Englishmen, and that means the king can't do whatever he wants with us. So we have the beginning of the argument between the colonists and the king over how much power is the king allowed to have. And how much power over the people may he have? Turns out he lost the writs of assistance case. So that meant the king was going to have the power that he wanted. But this is just the beginning, right? Because the more power a king gets, what happens? Walker?
The more he wants.
The more he wants, yes. Power corrupts. So what we're going to see is the colonists are going to see that the king just wants more power, and more, and more, and more. And when they realize that, well, this is just never going to be, there's no permanent freedom in a constitutional monarchy, then they are going to completely rebel and make a new kind of country. All right, so we'll pick up that story of the story of the argument, which is going to lead to the American Revolution. We'll pick it up tomorrow. All right, everybody? That's it for today. Thank you very much. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.